Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food, culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food at Occupy Wall Street and Type and Tail. Since mid-September, Lower Manhattan in New York City has become home to a new movement, Occupy Wall Street. On the phone is Amy Hamburger. Amy leads the Food Working Committee for the Occupy Wall Street protests. Welcome to Hot Grease, Amy. Amy, welcome to Hot Grease.
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. I know you are in Lower Manhattan right now.
Yep.
Okay, so let's get started. First of all, for folks who are just tuning in to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network and they're listening to mainstream media, we're going to give you the real deal about the Occupy Wall Street platform and tell you about food there. One of our former guests, Shoshana Levy, did a great blog post about the food at Occupy Wall Street. How many meals per day are you serving to protesters?
The food here, I mean, we're trying to make sure we're growing really, really quickly. So we're trying to make sure that everybody's fed. It's a 24-hour-a-day thing because we're trying to set up the kitchen while we're trying to feed everybody. For a while it was kind of like everyone, there was a joke that it was a 24-hour buffet. But at some point we had to put our foot down and we said we were just going to do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and we had to make a time. But still it changes because there's marches at different times and sometimes like people are arrested and they're getting out of jail, so it's really all different. And currently we're getting a lot of donations, so we're just putting out what we're getting. So really there's always food available.
So I read in one of the online publications that a lot of the cooking is going on in an apartment and you guys are transporting food there. Is that still happening or is there a makeshift kitchen actually set up?
No, there's that's still happening. But the shift has been more towards using an industrial kitchen. Like we had someone who owns a restaurant donate their kitchen, so we've been trying to shift to that. But a lot of the people in the kitchen work group actually like cooking in donated people's kitchens because they feel it's more homey and more fun. So we've been doing that. Tonight our dinner is coming from someone's kitchen and we sent a group over there and they're cooking there now and we're having soup and some other things tonight. So we kind of like how that works.
Cool. Are you getting a lot of donations from farmers, New York-based farmers and local restaurants?
We've been giving most of our businesses to local places. Like the first few days we were here, we became aware that we were cutting off the business of the food carts because there's food carts that work right alongside us. So the second we found that out, we decided to buy stuff from the food carts. So now we get our coffee from the food carts. We get like eggs in the morning from the food carts, and usually they'll give us all the stuff that they're going to throw out at the end of the day. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And we've just got a lot of our food from the 4th Street Food Co-op. They were going on vacation, and they couldn't use it, so they gave us all their vegetables, and they sold us some of their greens and bulk. So yeah, there's been a lot of that, and a lot of more people have been trying to contact us and set up mutually beneficial working relationships.
Okay, so vegetarians and people who need gluten-free meals, are you handling those requests from protesters?
As far as originally, like, we decided that we were going to be vegetarian only and make sure we had vegan. But then a lot of people seem to really want their meat. A lot of people were complaining that they weren't getting their protein and that they weren't feeling healthy. So we decided to do, like, one or two meat dishes. Plus, we kept donating a lot of pizza, and the pizza tends to have pepperoni and stuff on it.
So when you guys were initially forming the working committee, I know that there are probably about three or four different working groups or working committees. Was there an initial plan for the food committee?
Well, there's a lot of working groups, and every day they grow. Every time we see a need that isn't being filled, a new working group pops up. Like, I think three were just born this morning. But the food working group is a basic working group that was here from the very beginning, but definitely not in this form at all. In the very beginning, it was one guy basically from Food Not Bomb, Pumpkin Square, and he was basically sitting on one of these park benches with a pyramid of donated peanut butter and some donated bagels making peanut butter sandwiches. And it's just like the need grew, and like I walked up to him and offered to make him peanut butter sandwiches with him. And from there, we just had to grow as the people grew, and it's been a lot of work. But now we've got like basically what appears to be like a beautiful kitchen area. We're still working on storage and organization, but we've grown so much in 2 weeks. It's incredible.
What are some of your greatest needs at this point in terms of food and preparing foods for protesters?
Right now, our needs are storage. Because we keep, and ways to field donations, because we're getting a lot of donations, but it's like we can't necessarily store them here because we're still in a park. So what we really need is like either a church close by where we can store stuff and maybe even cook there. We always need like storage bins. We always need water. Yeah, that's really storage areas, if anyone wants to donate storage areas.
Amy, I have probably about two or three more questions, and one of them being, give us an example of some of the things that you're feeding folks. I read that you guys were feeding turkey on rye one day with spaghetti and bolognese. Give us an example of what the protesters are actually eating, what your group is preparing.
Yeah. Okay, so what we're preparing is, what happens with the groups is we'll pick like 2 to 3 or 4 people that want to go to someone's house, and we'll look at what we have around, if we have like cans of beans or things that need to process, and we'll send them to the house and we'll make it. The different groups have made, there tends to be a lot of bean dishes because we have a lot of beans, but group made an amazing lasagna, made some vegetarian stuffing that was really, really good. There was a stir fry that was excellent. I mean, anything that's like quick, semi-quick, and they made some really good mac and cheese, and anything that's like cost-effective and we can cook in bulk. They're making soup tonight, like I said before.
What do you say, Amy, to the folks that think that Occupy Wall Street is a joke, that you guys are not organized?
Oh, we are. Get down here. I mean, we are so organized, and we're getting more organized every day. I mean, for what we are, for the fact that we organically grew from just a bunch of people meeting in a park with the idea of, like, quote, Occupy Wall Street, unquote, the amount of organization and teamwork that goes on here is incredible. I would say come down and experience it. Be a part of it. See what goes on here. See how much work we're doing, and see how much organization is here for a leaderless group of hundreds of people.
In closing, I'm going to have to give a shout-out to Grub Street. They did an article about the library that you guys have down there, and they also mentioned that you guys have several food books in the library. Have you had a chance to, between preparing meals, to check out the library and all the food books?
No.
Give us a glimpse of what's in the library.
Yeah, no, I will tonight, because I totally haven't. I walked by it, and today we did a group meeting where all the different groups came together, which is really, really necessary. And I saw the library people, and they seem really involved and awesome. So I haven't, but I definitely will. So I don't have information on that.
Cool. Amy, Hamburger, any other information or things that you want to share with people about the food and how you're feeding people in Lower Manhattan?
Yeah, just that it's you know, it's a work in progress, but we're doing really well. And if you know there's any help you think you can offer, come down to the kitchen and talk to us. And if you want to get a feel for Occupy Wall Street, also volunteering in the kitchen is a great thing, just serving or something.
And I must say, folks, that Occupy Wall Street, I'm seeing that there are a lot of Occupies that are popping up all over the country. Albany has one. There's something happening in LA. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm right, right, Amy?
There's over 70 something, as far as I know, popping up all over the country.
And I'm sure they'll be having a working committee all around food. Amy, hopefully I can get down there in person and today or tomorrow, and we can do a better interview.
I would love that.
Yeah. But thank you for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Let's try to connect today or tomorrow so folks can get a clearer view of what's going on. Good luck and Godspeed.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be back, listeners. We're going to chat a few minutes about Occupy Wall Street. I'm going to give you my views. If you have any comments, call in live 718-497-2128. On Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on our brand new website, heritageradionetwork.com. Check it out, people. It's nice, new, and all clean and shiny for you. If you are just tuning in, you just missed an interview with Amy Hamburger. We were chatting with her about feeding the masses at Occupy Wall Street. We're going to edit that first segment. I know it's probably hard for you guys to listen to, but if you catch us on iTunes, or if you're catching us right now on iTunes or the archives, you'll have a great interview. I just want to give my 2 cents about Occupy Wall Street. If you're listening now, you can call in live. Our number again is 718-497-2128. One of the things that she did not hear the question was, what is the platform for Occupy Wall Street? That is the biggest thing I think that is missing from this movement. And she did not hear that question, so she wasn't able to answer it. So personally, my views as a person that's an activist, and I definitely believe in grassroots movements, I think that platform is getting lost in mainstream media and alternative media as well. It's amazing. I have to go down there today. There are only a few people that have reported about the feeding piece. Shout out to Shoshana Levy. I think I said this already. She was a guest on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network before. She actually did a blog post on Foodist about how they're able to feed so many people. And she interviewed Amy Hamburger. I didn't get the exact number for Amy about how many folks that they're feeding, but they're doing 3 meals a day. I think you heard her say that. Originally they were trying to do all vegetarian, but folks are wanting meat and stuff. So shout out to them for, you know, feeding folks. I'm curious too. And leave me a message on Facebook, Twitter, or the likes, to see if someone has donated food, or if you've gone down there and seen the makeshift kitchen or transported food from here to there. But all in all, I definitely think that Occupy Wall Street is going to spark something larger. I think that they must, in the next 5 to 10 days, come up with a better way to get their platform out to the everyday person. Because if you are not in that bubble in that activist world of Occupy Wall Street. People from the outside looking in actually think there's just a bunch of 20-something hipster hippies, unemployed, just hanging out. And I definitely think it's more than that. I do feel like there are some people down there just hanging out, but there's a real movement going on. So please, folks, if you're listening, get your message together. Get it out to places like Heritage Radio Network, where we try to bring good information to the everyday person. That's my two cents on Occupy Wall Street. You can go to their website. I forgot to tell her to shout out the website. It's OccupyWallStreet.org, and it's WallST.org. So OccupyWallST.org. And there are a few other sites that you can go to. I was chatting with New York Farmer, his Twitter handle again, or her Twitter handle, New York Farmer. Occupy Albany in New York is going on. They're popping up everywhere. You can go on Twitter and literally put an Occupy Wall Street or Occupy LA, and you'll see people talking about what they're going to do next. So, yeah, and I'm very curious to know if you're in other cities, what's going on in terms of food? What are they giving out to people? Is it peanut butter? Is it local pizza? Are they collaborating with the food trucks that are near? Let me know. All right, folks. We are going to take a quick break and come back with Shelly Chapman for Type and Tell.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Mendel Rivers to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not.
Welcome back to the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Remember show and tell in grade school? Here on Hot Grease, we have the grown-up version, Type and Tell. In this segment, we shout out the latest food discovery. On the phone to talk eat, relate, love is Shelly Chapman. Ms. Chapman is a psychologist and food relationship coach. Shelly, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hey, how are you?
Great, great. So I must ask you, food relationship coach, what does that mean?
Basically, Nicole, food relationship coach is, or the food relationship, I have to say, is having a relationship with food, literally. So everybody eats, and a lot of times we're unconscious about it. We don't think about it. It's like, oh, I'm hungry. Let me get something to eat. However, every single individual that eats has a relationship with food. And what I do is help people see how their relationship with food is a mirror for their relationship in their lives. So if you restrict a lot or try to control like what you eat and, you know, how much you take in, then you probably have some restrictive behavior and controlling behavior in other relationships. And if you're just sort of excessive and you indulge and you overallow and you don't sort of pay attention to when you're full or when you need to stop, well, more than likely, you're sort of excessive or you overallow or you don't pay attention to emotions and feelings and other cues that come up in your relationship. So essentially, it's just a mirror for how we get in life. And I like to say that how you show up at the table is how you show up in life.
And we must tell everyone, you are actually a psychologist. So you just didn't come up and say, oh, I'm going to coach people on food relationships, but you are a trained professional. What made you focus on this particular area?
So growing up, I've always loved food. I've been a foodie forever, since I came out the womb.
And when I was around 16 or 17, my parents had a divorce, and that was very traumatic for me. So I became a compulsive overeater, but I did not know there was, I didn't know there was a term or anything. All I knew was that Oreos and brown sugar Pop-Tarts made me feel wonderful. So, just as a way to deal with my trauma, I fought food, and I was an intense emotional eater. So when I was in college, I went to the counseling, and, she sort of broke it down, and she's like, this is what you're dealing with. And I was in a group for a while with other disordered eaters. And at the time, I was studying psychology, and I focused a lot on body image and relationships with women, and just sort of how it affected the way they viewed themselves. And that experience, just being around other women who were also struggling with food and having my own intense, trauma with it, really, really just made me think, the traditional practices are cool, but that's not all there is to the picture. So I graduated from Harvard with my master's in human development and psychology, and I left the track. I said, I am not going to go the traditional route because it's not working for me. So I really just started to come up with my own methods and, just through different practices and eating lifestyles, really sort of develop the food relationship theory.
So I love that. That story is a beautiful story. And folks who are trying to switch to a healthier lifestyle, how does the food relationship coaching and switching to a healthier lifestyle, how are they connected?
When people talk about healthy lifestyle, Nicole, they tend to think of like vegan or vegetarian.
Right.
And And I was a vegetarian for a year and I did vegan for 4 months. And girl, I woke up one day and I said, chicken and cheese, I like those. They need to be a part of my life. Like they're my friends. And I think what happens is when you become a vegetarian or a vegan for the reasons of trying to get away from something, then that's the wrong relationship to fill because you're trying to basically fill a void. And it's not about that. It's about eating a lifestyle that's meant for your body. So chicken and cheese have their purpose, and so do vegetables, right? So I'm a self-proclaimed flexitarian. I love being a flexitarian. So I'm vegan sometimes, vegetarian sometimes, I'm a meat eater sometimes. I run the entire spectrum. And what I try to tell people in my practice is that you don't need to be a certain type of eater. You just need to eat for your body, period. And so I teach women about intuitive eating and how to listen. Like, your body will tell you around that time of the month, you know that you crave certain things. Don't deny it. Your body is craving it for a reason. You know what I mean? So it's about getting in touch with the reasons behind why your body needs things versus coming from an intellectual standpoint and saying, my vegan friend said this, is that, and a third. And I know maybe some of the vegans in the line are probably going like, oh, my God. But I'm speaking from experience. I love the vegan movement. I support the vegetarian movement. However, it is not for everybody. And so the lifestyle, what you eat really is a matter of what your body calls for. And again, I'm a big, self-proclaimed flexitarian, and that works for me.
Speaking of teaching, what are some of the three common coaching topics? So a man or a woman comes to you, and what are the three things that always come up in terms of you coaching?
So one of them is, one of my speaking topics is coaching topics also is guests is coming to dinner. And it basically is about the unconscious guest that we invite to the dinner table all the time. And oftentimes when we show up to a meal, we eat and we're thinking, like, if we're by ourselves or with our partner or with our family, there's always some sort of unconscious guest there. And for a lot of people, those guests are shame and guilt. And they invite shame and guilt all the time to the table, which is why when they leave the table, they feel awful. They're like, oh, my God, I'm going to get fat. I shouldn't have eaten that. Instead of bringing guests like creativity and joy and satisfaction and fulfillment, those guests, have better table manners, and they're definitely going to make you feel better about the entire dining experience. And I like to let people know that those guests not only show up at the dinner table, but they also show up in your relationship and your career, the way you interact with your clients or your coworkers and that sort of thing. Also, a lot of what I give coaching one-on-one sessions called belly breakthroughs. And a belly breakthrough is essentially like, that gut feeling? Like, there's a reason why it's in your gut, like why that feeling is right there. But oftentimes we ignore it. We sort of push it aside, like, oh, this is focus. No, my logical mind tells me this, this, that, and the third, and I should follow that. but really getting people to get in touch with their gut feeling, like the sensations and the emotions that are there, because oftentimes that gut feeling is what's driving our eating behavior. It's what's causing us to either restrict or, you know, overindulge or not eat for what's right for our bodies. And so helping people get in touch with that, and I call it a belly breakthrough. So those topics come up a lot.
Uh-huh.
And definitely, I think more than anything, people just don't recognize that you can literally use who you become, who you are at the table as an example for who you are in the rest of your life. And if you can start to change the way you show up with food, I guarantee your relationship with your boo will, you know, your man or your woman will improve, with your, you know, with your career, with the way you show up with your children. Life just gets more delicious. And that's what I want ultimately. I want everyone to have a delicious life.
I love that philosophy. I love the first one about uninvited dinner guests. I don't even really think about that much. And really, I don't think a lot about, and I'm not sure, I'm curious about the listeners. Do folks think about the psychological effects of food? Shelley, so people are going to type and tell everyone about Eat, Relate, Love.
Yes.
So tell folks where they can find you. If they want more information, and if folks wanted to do a session, what does that look like and how would they contact you?
Cool. So you can find me on Twitter at Eat Relate Love, also facebook.com/EatRelateLove, and of course the website Eat Relate Love. And the cool thing, Nicole, is I have a 30-minute workshop. It's a virtual workshop. You can take it anytime. The minute you subscribe, you know, go ahead and put in your email, you get the workshop. You can take it, and you know, in the privacy of your own home. And it's basically sort of a taste of what coaching is like with me. And the workshop is called Guiltless Indulgence. And what it does is really get you to understand what you think about food. Like, what are your inherent beliefs around certain foods? And really, ultimately, it's about just being able to indulge in what you want, eat how you want, without feeling guilt, you know, without feeling shame. And so that workshop is really cool. It's gotten a lot of great feedback, and you get that free once you join eatrelatelove.com. And if you want to have a one-on-one and just get more in-depth, the belly breakthrough is basically discovery and strategy. So it's intense. This is not something that I coach you for months at a time, because once we're done, you won't need me, and that's ultimately what I want. You go about your business and you live your life in a very delicious way, and you know, I'm glad to be of service. It is a half-day experience, so we carve out time, literally, so we can get into the depths of your being and what's driving your food behavior. And we get to the root of it, like what, you know, what was it, a traumatic situation, what was it, and then develop strategies around how you can begin to have a better relationship with food and ultimately a better relationship with your life. And again, that's www.eatrelatelove.com.
Shelley, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. Listeners, type and tell
everyone.
Yes, listeners, tell everyone about Eat, Relate, Love. Type and tell. And thank you again for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Join me every Monday live, going straight to our website at heritageradionetwork.com. Click on live. You can join me at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The Heritage Meat Shop has just opened in the Essex Street Market. Open from 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 6 on Sundays, the Heritage Meat Shop supports independent family farms and animal welfare approved and certified humane raising standards. Most importantly, they offer a wide variety of heritage breeds. So stop by, get a sandwich, try the charcuterie. The Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market.